The sweet sound of sports you love from Sling. The collide of football pads. The squeak of shoes on a basketball court. The crack of the bat on a home run. The slice of skates cutting across the ice. But what about this one? That's the sound of all the sports you love, all at once. Starting at $40 a month. Experience it all live with Sling. Sling.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
I can tell you, I wasn't the one asking for this, so let's be clear about that reality. Herb, did I ask for this?
I don't believe so.
No.
Should we just leave?
Yeah, we can just make that agreement. I'll sign off on your expense accounts, whatever you need me to do. Good afternoon. Welcome to the SEC spring meetings. Start with just a couple personal observations before we get into the stuff, because we just finished the meeting and my notes are here. This is the end of my ninth year serving as commissioner of the Southeastern Conference. Some of you looked up quickly, marked it. It seems pretty remarkable that heading into year 10 once it hit June 1st. And there's been a lot, obviously, that's taken place over the last decade. I look back to my my first media days presentation. I was quoting Bob Dylan at the time. Some of you were there. The times they are changing, and that was an understatement, as it turns out. That was the understatement of the decade. So we've got a lot on our plate this week, a lot of good things ahead of us. I'm second, proud to announce that today retires my 14-team SEC logo belt that I have on here today. Thought I'd retire it yesterday, but I forgot to tweet about it, so I'll be tweeting about it as soon as we finish. Served me well, but we're into a new era. It's been nearly 3 years since we came to the announcement of growth to a 16-team league. If you go back to August of 21, shortly after that announcement was made, we began inviting both athletics directors, to join our athletics directors meetings, first remotely, and in January of 22, Joe and Chris began joining us on a regular basis. Fast forward last year here in Destin, Jay Hartzell and Joe Harris, the two presidents from Oklahoma and Texas, began meeting with our presidents and chancellors, and they've been active since that time. We expect they'll both have a full Destin contingent, head coaches, faculty reps, communication directors, senior women administrators here this week. And it's just a sign that we're about to end one chapter and begin another. We have seven student athletes here, so you'll see them around the hallways. Just so you know, our structure is we have the Student Athlete Advisory Committee, kind of that long-standing all sports advisory committee. So we'll have some representatives from that. Then we have a football leadership council, men's basketball leadership council, and women's basketball leadership council. We began those back in 2016 and have seven of our eight chairs and vice chairs. This also marks a summer of change as we go from our old CBS relationship into a new relationship with Disney. That's not news. We will be making some news later this week with a set of kick time announcements. Primarily the first 3 weeks of the season will be announced. That should be coming on May 30th. There'll be some other games in there, a few surprises probably for the season ahead. And then one of the changes that was part of our focus as we looked at the future of our television relationship way back in 2019, 2020, is trying to be more intentional and out ahead of kickoff time announcements for our fans. I want to work back. We'll have some 6-day and 12-day adjustments, but those will be flexes between the afternoon and evening windows. You're going to have a whole primer on this when we go to media days, and you'll see it play out. So by mid-June, we will announce all of our early window kickoff time. So that's the noon Eastern, really those kickoff times will be between noon and 1 Eastern. So 11 to noon Central, they won't all be right at that noon Eastern time. A little bit of later flexibility depending on the network, particularly the SEC network. We'll have roughly, we'll see if I get this right, half of our other flex windows. So we'll designate some games either evening window or afternoon window. I guess I should say afternoon then evening window. Some of those games times can flip a few hours, and then there'll be some that are designated for flex. So as we go through the summer, rather than having...
Ah, the sweet sound of sports you love from Sling. The collide of football pads. The squeak of shoes on a basketball court. The crack of the bat on a home run. The slice of skates cutting across the ice. But what about this one? That's the sound of all the sports you love, all at once. Starting at $40 a month, experience it all live with Sling. Sling.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All of our games subject to that 12-day and 6-day wait potentially through the season. You're going to know all of our early window kick times. You're going to know those by mid-June. We're going to know a set of afternoon and evening kick times subject to some flexibility. And then the remaining games will be in that flex afternoon, evening. So we'll have a lot more opportunity to communicate with our fans earlier on those kick times. I don't expect a lot of conversation here about football scheduling. You're obviously free to ask. Not a secret, we have 24 and 25 schedule formats established at 8 games. We announced our 25 opponents, a couple months ago. We do have 26 and beyond out there. Given all that's happening around us, scheduling kind of is out there, and we continue to talk about it, and we'll likely just have some updates. We are going to have a discussion about student athlete availability reporting. So members of our staff have been working on this project really since last summer. I referenced some considerations that we would have. That doesn't mean there's going to be a decision. In fact, you should not expect a decision, but you should expect a discussion. That's obviously different than the culture that's existed around much of college athletics over time. Go back to some of my comments, which I know a number of you are fond of doing since you quote myself back to me when you ask questions from like 6 years ago, not to James Crepia, who's not here. Yeah. I noted we don't want to just rush into something. It's not injury reporting. It's a very different circumstance given some of the privacy issues we have. Yet, when you start to see the numbers of dollars being bet on legalized sports gambling around college sports, not just football, but men's and women's basketball, volleyball, baseball, I think all of those catch your attention. We have to be thoughtful about how information is managed. It's also a reality that the lives of young people in colleges versus the lives of professional athletes are very different, a lot more exposure to people. A lot more people around our programs that go in and out. Sitting in classrooms is not something that happens to an NFL or a Major League Baseball participant, but it happens on a daily basis at the college level. We also are really pleased to welcome Bill Hancock and Byron Hatch here to talk with our athletics directors and our head football coaches about what to expect from the college football playoff. The year ahead, honored that Bill would spend what is essentially his last full week in the executive director role with us, but want to say heartfelt best wishes and thank you to Bill and Nikki. Bill will still be around and work with Rich Clark as he transitions in next week, and look forward to working with Rich, but honored that Bill would choose to spend some time with us. So with that introduction, I'll be happy to do my best to dodge every question you ask, unless it's about my retiring belt.
Greg, you mentioned the availability.
I thought you retired. You and Jay Gouger, the two worst retirement people that I know.
I made an F in retirement. Has there been much talk with the SEC or schools about trying to ban by states, ban prop betting on college for college athletes?
Not much, some, just recognizing that it's out there. We had a conversation here last year about with our student athletes, so we attached kind of the mental health conversation to sports gambling, to the pressures that we were learning about. It is a conversation that has taken place at a superficial level. There's a depth to it to come. Obviously, Charlie Baker's been clear about the need for some change, getting away from the open-ended nature of things. Also, though, we're talking about legalized sports gambling. Mm-hmm. And I saw some numbers that I didn't study up yesterday, reading a report about just still staggering numbers of unsanctioned sports betting that takes place. So yeah, I it's a conversation, but we haven't gone deep and we haven't started writing letters on the issue.
Greg, in the aftermath of that House settlement, are you still hoping for congressional antitrust action, and or what would be your level of interest in pursuing some collective bargaining?
Well, there's six questions there. First, let's go back. There's no aftermath. We are living after an announcement last week about a settlement agreement between plaintiffs' counsel and defendants. So that's reality. We're not in any aftermath. We are in that process still. That process will be months, in fact, many months ahead of us, subject to court review, subject to an entire legal process. I anticipate plenty of conversation here with our leadership about what that means for our own decision making. We have the opportunity to play an important role in our own decision making about the future, as opposed to leaving that just to the court system. So that's one component of your question. You have not seen me speaking about antitrust exemptions, and I want to be clear about that. I've been clear before. I have talked about safe harbors, about the ability for us to implement with legal protections whatever law might be enacted to provide support to student athletes so that we can get out of this cycle of constant litigation. We think, in fact, the position that's been taken is the settlement agreement is meant to deal with as much as we possibly can from a breadth of the issues in front of us that relate to antitrust. That said, I think Congress has still an opportunity to use the structure of this settlement to enact legislation to strengthen the future of college sports. And I hope that those who have said, well, we want to see you, college sports, involved in decision making before you come to us for solutions, take seriously that we are a part of problem solving. Obviously, we're in an election year. Congress is a challenging place to accomplish a task, and I say that respectfully. I mean, there's a lot on the plates of our House and Senate members. That said, we have 11 teams in the baseball tournament leading to a College World Series. We have teams going to Oklahoma City to compete against other conferences in a College World Series. We talked about the college football playoff, the Final Four. This is a national system that deserves national standards, not just state by state, whether it's legislative action to determine rules or attorney general action to determine rules. We need national standards, and that's the role that Congress plays. To be in collective bargaining, you're gonna have to be in an employment situation. I've not had a student athlete come to me and say, I wanna be taxed like an employee. And so.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
There are those who advocate for that reality. That takes me back to a fundamental statement, which is there's no better time to be a student athlete than right now in the history of college sports. No better time. And again, they're not calling me saying I want to be an employee, I want to be taxed like an employee. Those rights advocates, they have freedom of movement. They have freedom to access name, image, and likeness opportunities. It's a pretty good existence. And we ought to be careful to try to honor that while we think through better ways to support our student athletes in a national competitive structure.
Greg, when it comes to the revenue sharing aspect, the model that needs to be worked on, when we talk about the Title IX implications with that, splitting the revenue, how you do so among sports, is there any guidance perhaps based off the settlement of the pass pay with the majority of it going to football and men's basketball players? Is that something that can translate to the new revenue sharing model in the SEC and among the A4?
If I understand the question, I don't think those comparatives are precise enough. In other words, you're asking the precedent from cost of attendance, outcomes, or the Alston grant outcomes, and how those relate to Title IX and the new settlement model. So we have to see the conclusion of the new settlement model. I think speaking from a wide perspective, we continue to seek to provide broad-based programs. If you ask about what's happened with cost of attendance and Alston grants, our programs ride those broadly between men's and women's student athletes. This is a different model, and on the list of work projects includes working towards the outcome of the answer of the question that you're asking.
How much, I mean, obviously Title IX come into that when you discuss this, and because one way or another, you're going to have football players saying we deserve more than, or even our men's basketball counterparts, women's track and field. How do you go into this knowing just all of the potential legal ramifications?
It's a big world out there with a lot of legal ramifications. So we had, 4 or 5 lawsuits with legal ramifications. And we are going to be diligent in working through the outcomes around dealing with what we've announced from a settlement standpoint. And as I indicated earlier, there is no kind of looking back. We're in that process right now, and will be for months.
How much legwork has been done already working ahead with the Big Ten and your joint advisory committee you guys for?
Well, any of our work will be done with the appropriate sensitivity to settlements agreements and antitrust law. We do have joint defense privilege that was part of our communication when that was announced. And I'm not going to pop out there our conversations. That wouldn't be appropriate or respectful.
Greg, Todd, they are changing.
Hang on, Pete.
I was just going to ask you to go back to Congress for 1 second. I know that's a place where you and your league have spent a long time. You referenced the prevailing thought that it'd be easier to get help as opposed to some kind of overhaul. Could you walk us through maybe some next steps there, Greg, and what you'd be looking for, and what do you think is feasible?
I don't know that it's next steps. It's been the existence over the last 4 or 5 years. And I don't know if you and I've had the conversation. I think generally I've shared, dating back to our football championship game press conference, I had just come from a couple of days in DC, that what you've seen is a progression from maybe a little bit of curiosity. There's some who understand to, I think our visits have provided an educational basis where now there's a level of conversation, a level of interest. And I would say going forward, it's a continuing repetition of that educational effort. I would welcome action between now and the election. Most people with whom I converse say that's unlikely. And so your educational process will continue post-election, and it will depend on who's in leadership of each party within the House and Senate, where the majorities lie, and who occupies the White House. Those realities guide conversations. So as much as it's been unpredictable, I think it will still be unpredictable, yet we have a responsibility to engage in the education and in the conversation and seeking what I describe, as some national standards so we can conduct national competition. That's part of Congress's role.
Greg,
you want to follow up?
Just, it would be narrow now that we have the settlement or the framework for the settlement going forward. or to be narrower? And is that specifically, I guess, what you'd be looking for, is just unified national things to get the fiefdoms out that are popping up with different rule sets?
Well, to the extent that's possible.
Sure.
I go back to national standards. Yes, the settlement terms would provide a new and specific framework that could be used. But again, I think we all took civics and we know things get attached. And, you know, trying to have some coalescing around a solution can try one's patience, but also expand one's thinking.
Thank you.
Greg, what have the coaches' concerns, what have they expressed to you about the roster caps, and what are you hearing that you can tell them about that? Where is that discussion?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you exactly what I'd say. I've not talked to our coaches about that, other than individually to say, hey, slow down, guys. So we had a meeting 3 weeks ago. Some of you have sources. That's great. I think it's a bit of threat, a danger, that we can't have a conversation about concepts that don't populate themselves outside the room. So then that provokes a reaction. I know other conferences have discussed it. Coaches have then texted our coaches. They get fired up, and we said, just wait, we're going to have a conversation. That's where it is. That's a concept. And understand that football captures the attention, but we have 21 championship sports, all of which need to have a level of conversation about that roster piece.
Greg, do you have any clarity on what sort of the NIL policing piece of this settlement might look like? I mean, how much of that has been clarified, and to your best of your knowledge, like, what is that actually going to look like, and how do you feel collectives might fit into that?
Well, I just reread like the settlement terms, and the word confidentiality is at the end of it. So we'll see. I was over here.
Times are changing. Were just thoughts on the fact that there's a player within the SEC now at, you know, one of the flagship institutions in Georgia suing the acting head coach for the University of Florida.
Oh, I'm not a fan of lawsuits. That's what I think.
Does it just kind of speak to just the new reality with the NIL and everything that everybody from Billy Napier to all these coaches are having to deal with?
Yeah, but there's been lawsuits. Is that the only lawsuit involving a coach over the last year? Won't be the last. You know, that we have a legal system, and people have rights to pursue what they view as grievances, and the legal system sorts that out.
Greg, I heard you talk on the SEC Network on the baseball tournament.
See, I told you somebody called me.
So you use the term hard decisions as you implement the settlement. What are some of those hard decisions ahead?
Oh, we'll see. You just said hard decision. So when you have a shift of revenue up to 22%.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Things won't remain the same. And that predicts that people are going to have to make decisions. Now, that may be any number of wide range of issues that I haven't even begun to consider, some of which I can imagine. Some of which I'm certain we'll learn about this week and in the weeks to follow.
Greg, what have the conversations been like, I guess, over the last 3 to 4 weeks and maybe longer, in terms of the revenue sharing and how athletic departments are going to come up with that money? I know it comes from the college football playoff, I know it comes from the conference, but also ticket sales, merchandise, whatnot, to be able to afford to pay these players and be competitive in the SEC. What have those conversations been like in this week? What lies ahead?
Well, the
trying to raise that money is what I'm getting at for some smaller institutions.
We don't have smaller institutions. We have
from a budget
flagship state universities.
Correct.
Yeah.
From a budget
Well, I think people are going to work to understand the terms of the settlement first. As I said, that's in process. And I intentionally use broad. We're going to have hard decisions to make. You don't have that kind of economic shift without decisions having to be made. Have we been granular on that? No. Have we talked generally about what might be ahead? We have, and I think there's been more of those conversations taking place rapidly on campus at this point.
Do you see a time where schools over the next, you know, whatever that is, 8 to 9 months, trying to find different ways, whether that be to raise ticket prices or whether that be, and I'm talking about for the future, but coming up with different scenarios for them to be able to afford whatever that salary cap, we're going to call that, is going to be?
I would not want to predict the what. I think the range of issues will be in front of people.
Greg, to clarify on the NIL piece, I mean, when we talk about collectives, what is your vision on how they might exist in this future
structure?
Yeah. Do you think they have a place?
I don't know that my opinion on that matters right now. We'll go through this settlement process to its conclusion. And again, they're going to be a set of decisions made, so we'll see.
Greg, what's your confidence level that the revenue sharing model will be in place by August 2025?
What is my confidence level?
Well,
let's go back to earlier. Let me see if I can explain what's going to happen. Is we have a settlement agreement that goes through a court process. If the outcome of that process is the settlement is accepted in place and it's accepted at this time next year, then we will have a model. But that's not something that I control.
Greg, it seems like when an NCAA rule is enforced upon a school, they then encourage state lawmakers or maybe perhaps attorney generals to take action, some kind of action, because they don't like how that rule was enforced. This settlement apparently reaffirms certain rules that the NCAA has had and maybe will create in the future. How do you trust your schools not to encourage or bend the rules or encourage their politicians to take action going forward?
Well, we need to have the settlement. We need to have the settlement terms. And even within those settlement terms, my expectation would be that we'll be looking at some of these state laws because they're all written differently. Some of them were written 3 and 4 years ago before the current, some of the current approaches were developed. Some of the transparency issues will be needed. So there's gonna have to be some change. And yeah, we'll have to have some messaging around what state laws might need to be modified to facilitate that the onset of the settlement.
Now
the issues about how things are overseen and accountability, I think those will be part of this new chapter. And my desire would be, as we collaborate towards that kind of outcome, that will reinstate a healthier culture around meeting expectations, and when expectations are not met, the ability to provide the right kind of accountability in the right sort of time frame.
How do you view enforcement going forward post settlement, as far as whether it's a new entity created or NCAA or outside entity? Like, what do you see it looking
like? Well, the reality is, I think there's some options. There's some openness to what that might look like. So I'm not going to narrow that at this point.
Commissioner, you mentioned 9 years. If I was to take a look at your day calendar 9 years ago compared to today, how different is it in your world?
Yeah, very different. Couple things. One, I didn't go to Washington, D.C. a lot. And I think I've been there 5 or 6 times this year, with more to come. I had no cell number of a member of the House or Senate. I now have many, and they have mine. I think I've shared previously that COVID changed my management style, and some of our staff are here. We just had a staff meeting where 2 weeks ago I said, look, if you think I've been distant, not around, focused on things other than you're focused on, you are exactly right because of what's going on around. And so where I would be actively overmanaging a number of issues, in 2015-16. I am not nearly as involved in those things. And that's a compliment, again, to people on our staff who, and we just had 11 teams selected the NCAA baseball tournament. We had an enormous crowd through the week. I'm not involved in any of that. That's just a credit that that can happen so well to our staff. And I can go back through the year and think about that. I had seen, I think one of the real changes for me is I had like been right next to like some of my colleagues in the office, Mike Slive. And you think that you understand what it will be like. And when Mark Richt retired, he said, you never know what it's like to sit in the chair until you sit in the chair. And so enormous appreciation for people that do these jobs in the Southeastern Conference over the last 90 plus years, but also respect for colleagues who do these jobs in other roles at the college level, given the amount of change. It's different. They asked me, when I interviewed, I had to write a 1, a 3, and a 10-year plan. So like I could write a 1-year plan, and what's interesting, I've gone back and looked, and I batted like 700 since we're in the baseball softball time on that 1-year plan. You know, you think things and you get in and some of it's delayed. The 3-year plan, some of that took 5 years. The 10-year plan just talked about change, not predicting this sort of change. You know, I talked about people wanting to come to us to find out how we've been able to sustain success and asking questions. I talked about writers and business people and faculty members. I think the OU in Texas outreach was very much about, you know, wanting to be a part of things because we've done so well. So
whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Even though I couldn't say, like, A, B, C, D in a decade, here's what's going to happen. Some of those big principles I wrote even then as part of that interview plan have played out in kind of real world sort of ways.
Greg, how did you get to that 20% number? Why not more, why not less?
What 20% number?
Of revenue.
22. Back and forth.
Why not less?
Well, two things. For back and forth with plaintiff's attorneys and the defense group. The second thing is that's not like the end. So there are scholarships. There's Alston grants, there's cost of attendance, there's concierge medical care, concierge mental wellness care, all kinds of gear, all of those costs borne by the institution. So that's part of this economic flow, direct economic benefit, excuse me, but there's a lot more beyond that 22% that's being provided to young people.
Greg, can you get out of this cycle of litigation without collective bargaining / employee or is there a way to do collective bargaining without
you're asking
employment?
Took a breath. I was done coughing. Well, I'm not a prophet. There's an opportunity here, yes.
In what way?
Well, you're really asking about hypotheticals. Like, is this the end? Is somebody else going to? So the breadth of the settlement is intended to give us a path forward, provide a level of clarity about the future. That doesn't embed employment automatically, and you go right to collective bargaining. So we're in states that don't have collective bargaining on public campuses. There are a set of complexities there that are just not acknowledged. As people write about collective bargaining parallels between college sports and professional sports, that played out over 30, 40, 50 years of lockouts with antitrust lawsuits. There can be a better way, and there's an opportunity here, but you know, in life, nothing is certain, as we're reminded
every day. I mean, it's obviously you've got no transfer rules at this point, and there's no...
Oh, we don't have no transfer
recruiting
rules.
Caps.
Well, we don't have... We have transfer rules. Now, it doesn't stop the number of times that people transfer. But we do have transfer rules. And you assume that some kind of bargaining mechanism will resolve that in a different way. But understand the professional league started from the opposite end of the spectrum, which was complete restriction. You go back and read stories of people who said, I'd rather go sell insurance than play fill in the blank city, or for that owner. That's not where we are. So what I think's not been made clear is the comparative realities between historic professional sports collective bargaining and where we are. And as I said, those who advocate for rights, there's a pretty good deal on the table right now that doesn't implicate some of the negative aspects or some of the problematic aspects like taxation. So there's a lot there that has to be unpacked to assume that it would simply create solutions to some of the challenges that people will raise.
Greg, how do you think the new model will impact player movement transfers?
It remains to be seen. It can be managed in different ways. But we're going to walk through a settlement piece and we'll see what that allows.
Because schools could sign contracts with players, you think it could? There's a possibility it would limit it.
We'll see.
It's obviously hard to predict. Obviously, 11 teams going into the NCAA baseball, which happened with the addition of Texas and OU, you might be able to break that record next year.
Might be. Should be.
You should break that record
next year. Well, I was asked yesterday, nobody's ever done it. And, my first observation in the interview was there's no cap on the numbers that's part of the selection criteria. Over the last few years, I have observed generally within meetings that the line of thinking will have to change. And I remarked yesterday that you've heard, well, in baseball, if you don't have 12 or 13 wins, you're not going to be on the board. Well, you could have 11 or 12 wins next year in this league in baseball and be a really, really good team. In fact, if you look at Ole Miss, I didn't check the RPI yesterday, but at the end of the week, they were like 32. And that's with a losing record. So they're kind of gerrymandered out because we have this 500 record, which says dumb down your non-conference schedule. And I don't think we want that. That's not good for the game. People want to challenge themselves at a high level. Midweek, I'm in D.C. on one of my trips. I pop on the television, and Arkansas is hosting Texas Tech for two midweek games. Those are the things we want to encourage. And, we should have high expectations, but it's going to challenge some of the selection thinking. I got beat up during basketball because I talked about pressure on AQs. And I brought the articles. I never said take away AQs. But I think we're going to have to be challenged, like the Transformation Committee did, to say, perhaps it's time to expand brackets and provide opportunities. A lot of our colleague conferences invited Division II and Division III institutions in so they can meet minimum, so they can exist. Against that reality, we have conferences like ours that have grown to 16 teams. We're a super league of our own. The Big Ten's at 18, the ACC's at 18, I think the Big 12's at 16. And so those are highly competitive situations that will have to be understood and evaluated in a way that probably different than sport committees functioned a decade ago with smaller conferences and fewer members of Division I overall.
Greg, when you talk to SEC baseball coaches, maybe some changes to rules that we've seen this past year when it comes to maybe stickering the bats, how that process goes about as well. How much input have you seen or changes when it comes to sport? Maybe over the past 2 to 3 years, maybe with different rules that y'all have been placed compared to where we are now?
Like big picture, as far as changes in the rules, we created collaborative replay. We, the SEC, created collaborative replay in 2016 because that's not perfect, but a better way to make and support officiating decisions. And I can recall, that first season, LSU's at Auburn, there's a last second play, boundary catch in the end zone. If you remember, the catch was successful, even after evaluation, in the stadium booth, what was not picked up on was that the snap had occurred after the clock had expired.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
And the voice from the replay center said, hey, you need to check the clock at the snap, because I think one of the hardest expectations is officiating is you take basketball and you bring a bunch of officials who are running around breathing hard, sweating, put them on the little jog device and tell them to evaluate, find the right video first, then evaluate it properly while there are 10 or 15 or 20,000 people screaming and coaches staring at them from the sideline. I think like that's the worst way to make decisions, just like basic psychology 101 in decision making. And so that's one effort that for us begins Labor Day weekend and ended yesterday. I mean, we're a 7-day-a-week operation, so that's a change. And I think that's helped provide better outcomes. You look in baseball, I went to a Yankees-Red Sox series as we were considering implementation in the summer of 16. I'm a Yankees fan. The umpires were clearly wrong on a safe out play at first that didn't favor the Yankees. You know, Joe Girardi was the manager. I expect he's going to come out on fire. He just walked out, talked for a few seconds. They went to replay, overturned it, and life went on. It took some of the emotion and the heat out of the game. Now, I think even this weekend, you see in softball last night, Stanford LSU, and even our situation Saturday, where you create traps on what we can't do. So what I would like to see is more flexibility around the use of replay, not to make it an officiating circumstance, but let's have some new thinking and not be afraid of technology. Pitch calling for us in baseball. We were first with technology for the catchers to hear, and now we have wristbands. You look at the 2-minute warning in football, you look at some of the timing changes. The games still look the same. We put a green base. And all of a sudden, I've got people that say, that's the worst thing I've ever seen, and that's the best idea I've ever seen in baseball. It should have happened in softball like 5 years ago, given the tightness of the game and the number of plays at first. But we have to move past some of the old way of doing business, and we're doing that now with the settlement. You know, in life, you don't want to like cast off the lines and lose sight of land. That's hard, especially when you have a normal way of thinking, a system that works. But we are constantly being challenged to retain the core of what we do, but walk through some uncharted waters, whether that's playing rules, what's happening around us legally. And I think maybe people can criticize we've been slow to adapt, but we've continued to adapt, whether it's the things we're talking about from a legal settlement, whether it's NCAA rules, the NCAA's had to adapt, and even our playing rules. So I don't know if that gets to the heart of your question, but those are some ad hoc examples.
It was a good amount of them.
We wanted and continually talk about what's ahead. We talked even about numbering situations, about alignment in football. I don't think the general fan base realizes the challenge happening at the line of scrimmage with placement of players, who's eligible, who's not eligible. Some of the NFL rules help clarify that, and those are guys that are veterans, might play 9 and 10 years and that's all they do. You put a freshman linebacker trying to figure out, well, there's movement and which one of those guys is covered up and which one's not covered up, and then you add a hurry-up offense to it. You know, that's a pretty big challenge that I think has to continue to be evaluated by the Football Rules Committee.
Greg's gonna tell you, he's gonna go to, let's take one more question here from Ben.
Craig, just to
clarify. I was just getting warmed up.
Just to clarify, when you talk about the availability reports, are you talking about physical fall or are you talking about across all sports specifically? Is that
Across a set of sports where the trends in gambling activity justifies that. So I listed a set of sports: football, men's, women's basketball, baseball, softball, volleyball. I get that list, or close to it. Those are on our mind. That doesn't mean it would all be there. Pete?
The most ambiguity in the wake of the settlement from ADs and coaches come from Title IX revenue. I guess as you're addressing them this week, what do you plan on telling them in terms of how they can divide,
Oh, I don't plan on telling them anything. I think that's part of the conversation. We've the question I was asked earlier about our trends. Our trends have been to provide some equity. This is a very different world that I expect will elicit opinions, perspectives, and you know, we've got time to learn those perspectives, and then we're gonna have to work through what that means from a decision-making standpoint. I think you go back fundamentally, we've won 4 national championships so far this year. We've got a number of opportunities ahead. They're all in women's sports. So we've supported our female athletes in just great, great ways. Yesterday, we had a set of games we weren't as successful as we wanted in softball. I think that's who we are. Now, we've got to wrestle with this new piece, and that's what the conversation will help us do. We'll wrestle through it and come out in a healthy manner.
Thank
you. Thanks,
Greg. Yep. We have credential pickup here at 8 o'clock in the morning.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.